copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
One of the great joys and surprises of these pre-forum conferences is that we know very little about what the other speakers are going to say. So one of the delights is finding how much it sort of overlaps and comes together. So I'm so glad for what Pablo and Yelena have said. And you will see some of the overlaps in all of this. So I want to continue on this theme of sex and sensuality. Before I do that, I just want to make one comment from a woman. You may have heard the name Esther Perel. She sort of hit the internet, the YouTube scene, as a sex therapist, a marriage therapist, and she's very much a daughter of the times, whereas the Gottmans are an older generation. So she has some interesting things. She said, I remember in one of the talks, she says, "I've been married three times, but I've been married to the same person three times." Because there are stages in marriage that we've been talking about, of that first sort of in love stage when everything is beautiful and wonderful and you can do no wrong. And then the second phase stage when everything, you get irritated with just everything, but the things that you loved in the beginning, and the arguments are all about, do you really trust me? And will you be there for me? And you're learning to repair when things go wrong, because they always do go wrong. And one of the arts of marriage is learning to repair, learning to work together, as we have been saying. And then the third is that sort of the long-term commitment. And she said at each stage, she and her husband would sit down and talk together. What's going wrong in our relationship? What are we longing for? What can we do differently? And then have a recommitment ceremony, which I think, and she's not a Christian, yet she's talking in this sort of language that I think is very good for us as Christians to think about. So, and she says, you can stay in love for a lifetime, but you have to work at each of those three stages. So as we think about the topic of sexuality, continuing on from where Yelena has laid such a great foundation, we're living, as we've said, in a generation where we bring all sorts of brokenness to marriage, and in this area of sexuality especially. So what did you bring to your marriage? So many people bring little helpful sex education. I talk to my students at the seminary in the States, and I'm always amazed by their stories of how badly their parents talked to them about sex. How most of it came from pornography. That's the big sex education, and it's a terrible place to get your sex education. So many people come into marriage having had a broken marriage modeled to them. They haven't seen a good marriage in their parents, their grandparents, their uncles, their aunts. You're fortunate if you have lived around a good marriage. So many people, especially more women obviously than men, come with the stories of sexual abuse. And this deeply affects, because it so often happens at a young age, your ability to trust, your ability to be intimate, your tendency to shame and guilt about anything sexual, and so a distorted view of sex. And then, as Pablo has been saying, the culture of radical individualism, we are children of our times, and we bring that into our marriages. We've been brainwashed by the culture. Even though we think we're good Christians, we've still been affected by it. And then, of course, all the cultural views of sex and I've seen such a radical change in the 70 years of my life in relation to marriage and sex, where now anything goes. As you said, you walk down the street and you see bits and pieces of this on television, on the internet. So much now that it's hard for young people to know what is normal. Is there normal sexuality? So we talk about the hookup culture, the sort of the casual promiscuity of sex, where you don't have relationships, you just have hookups for times of sex. Maybe a little bit of friendship in it, but there's no long-term commitment. We live in the porn culture, which, as I said, is such a bad educator, but most young people are exposed to it around the age of 10 or 11, and even earlier. And so many now are getting it on their phones, as well as on their other forms of screens. And the myth is that it's, of course, that it's harmless and educational. That sex can be disconnected from relationship, that a lifetime faithfulness is old-fashioned, that sex is always amazing and exciting, and the best sex is away from the routines of normal domestic life. And of course, real relationships are difficult. Intimacy is difficult. It's much easier to pick up your phone or your computer and go on your own and masturbate with porn to get the sexual release, especially if you have been having an argument with your spouse. And especially, of course, if you are single and have sexual needs. So fantasy is easier than reality. We create this perfect world. We look for the perfect sexual partner. And you can, you know, spend hours going through the internet finding the perfect situation that arouses you, but sadly you gradually get more bored with it. So there are problems with sexual addiction where sex with real people doesn't arouse you anymore, or not as much. And many young people have grown up channeling emotional tension when they're angry, especially boys, when they're sad, when their parents are having a quarrel. They resort to masturbation just to relieve the tension. So it becomes like a drug. And of course, on the internet, you can see any form of sex, whether it's bisexual, homosexual, group sex, sex with animals, sex with machines. And fundamentally, sex with women in porn is demeaning to women. All sorts of horrible things happen to women in porn sex. And many of the porn stars, of course, have to take drugs just to do the things that they do. So the porn culture is, I would say that probably 90% of the students, this is in a theological education, have been radically affected by pornography in a way that's distorted their view of sex. And increasingly women, as well as men. And then we have the whole GLBTQIA and goes on and on culture, which again is confusing. Is about who are we? What is our identity? Am I really heterosexual? Maybe I'm same-sex attracted. Maybe I'm trans. What is my gender? So many young people, again, coming into relationships confused about their identity. And the church, over the years, has not been great at helping us with this. Thankfully, many more churches are beginning to talk about sex, but the church has distorted the biblical perspective. So in the early years of the church, especially with a sort of Platonic repression of the body. So a Gnostic suspicion of the body. The body is bad, the spirit is good, so sex is part of the body, so you repress it. It comes into the area of badness, of sin. So there's a real suspicion about sex. So Jerome says in AD 350, anyone who is too passionate a lover with his own wife is himself an adulterer. Or you can have sex to have children, but don't enjoy it too much. Don't get aroused. Don't think that there's anything good about being ecstatically sexual with your spouse. We know the story of Augustine's struggle with sexual addiction and his gradual movement towards a more healthy view of sex in his later life and later teaching. And as a result of all this, we live today even where churches are too embarrassed or find it too difficult to talk about sex. Everyone else is talking about it, but there's a silence in the church. And as Yelena said, we need to be talking about this almost more than anyone else for our children's sake, that they should know what a biblical Christian view of sex is. So we come to this place in our culture of radical individualism, the church distortions, that many people living with parents who've been divorced from dysfunctional families, a culture which says, why wait for marriage? Why not just have sex whenever you feel like it? Just as you do, you eat when you're hungry, have sex when you feel like it. The hyper-sexualized culture of the hookups, the porn, of high expectations that sex is always going to be fun and it will meet my needs for intimacy. The GBLTQ culture, the BDSM culture that has been sort of popularized by 50 Shades of Grey. And then ultimately the sort of anything goes culture. So how do we as Christians live in a world like this where our minds, our bodies are shaped, our brains are shaped by this culture? And we are called to be very different. And it feels like, you know, we're the only one. Think of young people trying to stand up against this in high school. You know, we are salmon, we are fish swimming up against the stream, and the whole culture is pouring down on top of us. I love this quote from Christopher West. He says, if you want to know what's most sacred in the world, all we need to do is look for what is most violently profaned. And sex is violently profaned, isn't it? It's a war zone that the devil loves to get into our lives and destroy us. He knows that sexual intimacy in God's purposes actually points to a higher intimacy with God himself. He knows that all through the Bible, marriage is a picture of our relationship with God, and he wants to destroy that. So we begin so often in counseling people who come to us with these stories, with the stories of brokenness and agony. And we have to go through often lament and grief in counseling, grief over sexual abuse, grief over the lack of sexual education, of giving in to the culture of promiscuity. And then often anger at the culture, anger at sin, anger at people who have sinned against you, a righteous indignation and anger, and anger at the evil one, the devil. And then moving into a place of sorrow and repentance for how we have been complicit and responded to how we have been sinned against by others. And this takes us into, I think, the healing, cleansing, transforming power of the gospel. As I hear the stories of the sexual development of the students at the seminary, I'm always in wonder at the gradual healing and transforming power of the gospel. So, and it's gradual healing into this other story, as Glyn Harrison calls his book, A Better Story. That's the Christian view of a better story about sex that we want to promote. And this story is the story, of course, of creation and fall and redemption and ultimate restoration. But in the beginning, the Bible talks about, gives us a picture of what God intended in this, the marriage, the picture of God and his people, Israel, and of Christ and the church. And it's a narrative of desire, of love, of pursuit. And that's what marriage is too. It's a narrative of desire for one another and of giving to one another. So we are made in the image of God, as we said yesterday, to reflect the character of God, to have relationships, to be fruitful in having children and in being creative, in creating works of art and doing good things with our lives that are part of the dominion task that we are called to. So in the beginning, in Genesis, of course, we read of this, as we've referred to before, this delight of Adam in this new created creature, Eve, who is unlike him, but like him. She's different from the animals. The animals didn't satisfy him. And he says, at last, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. Here is someone who is like me, who with whom I can be intimate. And they can be naked without shame. And there is this deepest knowledge. Adam knew Eve, his wife, of good sex. And I say good sex because if you think of, contrast this with porn sex is sex with animals, with maybe several people, someone who's not your wife, maybe someone the same sex. There is honesty and openness in good sex. There's unselfishness in giving pleasure, accepting the other person as they are, delighting in each other, making love to another, not to self, and a commitment for life. There's none of that in porn sex. And the purpose of sex, from God's point of view, is that it should unite us and gives us companionship and pleasure and bonding. It should be for the sake of having children. So all marriages should be open to that possibility. And then sacramental, in the sense that it points to a deeper, higher intimacy with God himself. So after the fall, everything gets broken. And women tend, this is Dan Allender's sort of reading, paraphrasing of the biblical story, women tend towards loneliness and longing, and men more towards frustration and a sense of failure. So they may deal more with shame and feeling that they're not respected. Whereas men, women often are longing for more, longing for intimacy. And after the fall, as we saw yesterday in this amazing picture from Masaccio of Adam and Eve, that there is a sort of war between the sexes. Thus they, in mutual accusation, says John Milton, spent the fruitless hours, but neither self-condemning, but of their vain contest, appeared no end. This breaks the intimacy. And you can see the shame that Eve is covering her breasts. Adam is covering his face. He's so ashamed, he doesn't want to look at what he has done. This is a profound breaking of relationship. And God has given us the channels and the fences, the Old Testament, the New Testament prohibitions against homosexuality, against sex with animals, against adultery. All of these things are for our fulfillment and flourishing. It's not just God being a killjoy God. He wants us to flourish, so he puts these fences around the original Genesis commands, which allows our sexuality to be a deep river flowing through a deep channel rather than just spreading over the boundaries like a flood, breaking the banks. These boundaries are there to give us depth and direction. And the Song of Songs, which is the most wonderful book, because it's all about delight in sex. Now, our forefathers interpreted it as a metaphor. When it talks about kisses, it's God kissing us from heaven. Or when it's breasts, it's the nurturing doctrine of the church. Or lips are the law and the gospel. Now, we more contemporary theologians realize that it's not just a metaphor. This is literal, wonderful, erotic love between a man and a woman. So in a sense, it's lessons in lovemaking. There's a shameless delight of these two imagining each other's bodies, thinking about them, having a sexual imagination. And imagination, of course, can go both ways. It can be used for dark things or it can be used for wonderful things. But it says something about understanding and enjoying the difference. And notice both the man and the woman are longing for each other, delighting in each other's bodies. And there is that little reminder, that refrain, don't awaken love until essentially the right time, that's repeated two or three times through the book. You go on through the Old Testament, Proverbs, the Old Testament stories of the different men like Joseph and David and their moments of temptation and how they dealt with them, and Proverbs, and Hosea and Gomer. And then on into Jesus' teaching and Paul's teaching, and Paul in 1 Corinthians talking about the, it, again, against the culture, which said a man has control over his wife's body. Paul says, no, it's mutual. You each have ownership of the other's body, and you should come together to meet each other's needs and desires. But it should be a mutual, not one always demanding of the other. And there should be mutual consent, mutual submission, as we saw yesterday. And Paul says, don't abstain for long, because otherwise you may get into temptation. So there's a realism for him. And finally, there is this sort of word in Ephesians 5:32 where Paul says, a man shall leave his father and mother, hold fast to his wife. The two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. So this is the pointing ahead to sex. Physical sexual union is giving us a taste of a union that one day will be ours with God. Not necessarily a physical sexual thing, but an intimacy that we can't even imagine. It's so deep and so wonderful, and that our marriages should point towards that.